The literalist in me becomes furious whenever he visits the National Museum of Air and Space and sees a building with walls and ceilings. That one requires a little thought, or maybe on matters involving space it helps to be like me. You know, a bit of an airhead. We'll be getting more into space in a little bit, but first here are two quick Jiffy quick reviews on my new book, How to Deal with the Stuff That Sucks. I expect the world of Chris Rodell, and Chris Rodell, after 40 years, has yet to let me down. Quinn Fallon, Columbus, Ohio. Great read, funny but real. Kirk Baser, Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania. Who says an impactful, good review needs to be multiple paragraphs long? I welcome all praise, and play no favorites when it comes to review word counts. But there you have two one-liners that I think make strong persuaders to anyone fence-sitting about buying my books. Want to see more? I've created a page just for book reviews, promos, etc. Check it out at Facebook, How to Deal with the Stuff That Sucks. I took possession of 75 new copies of the softbound books last Friday, and I'm very pleased by the reaction. Sold more than 20 over the weekend. Best of all, people just love it. They're laughing when they tell me about their favorite parts and how they feel. The book makes them very happy. You're all familiar with my belly aching about money and elusive stability, but I write it all off when I see one face, one smile, that comes from someone who's read a book that I've written. It really means a lot to me. It's one of the world's greatest feelings, and I did it all by myself. I'm Chris Rodell, and this is the Use All the Crayons podcast. Today we'll be dealing with discussing space, because sometimes we all need a little space. The first thing that crossed my mind when I heard there were Earth-like planets 600 light-years away was the optimistic hunch that there had to be Subway restaurants on it. NASA planet hunters say the sphere they're dubbing Kepler-22b is likely to have all the critical elements necessary to sustain human life. To me, that means Subway. There's a natural human euphoria when we find a place no one's ever been. No one else at all. A place we can call our very own. Pilgrims felt it when they landed in what was called the New World, a place that had been inhabited by Native Americans for tens of thousands of years. What followed was more than 400 years of mutual hostility, betrayal, and a genocide, culminating in saturation casino gambling and Facebook fights over whether sports mascots for teams with names like Redskins were tributary or mockery. See, that's the thing. This Kepler-22b... And geez, couldn't we please get someone with a spark of creativity on the NASA planet naming squad? It is, as mentioned, 600 light years away from Earth. Do you know what a light year is? Shame on you if you said it's a unit of measurement that's less filling than a regular year. A light year is 5.9 trillion miles. That means it would take about 22 million years for the space shuttle to get there. Better hope they opted for the lifetime subscription to satellite radio. What worries me is how NASA scientists all seem to exhale when they heard there's another planet we can inhabit, as if it relieves some of the pressure to treat this one with a little more care and dignity. Quote, "This is a phenomenal discovery in the course of human history," said University of California, Berkeley, Jeffrey Marcy. "This discovery shows that we Homo sapiens are straining to reach into the universe to find planets that remind us of home. We're almost there." He makes it sound like we're going to land on Kepler-22b and be delightfully surprised to find drapes on all the windows. It's like he's putting on a down payment to a new home that's the one's in such sad shape that no one would ever dream of buying it, an interstellar version of how we got into this subprime mortgage mess. We Earthlings are so stricken with wanderlust. We're always in a crazy push to get to the next someplace different. We can't be satisfied inhabiting our own neighborhoods and making pleasing improvements to what's already ours. Here's the next guy. I dream of what it would be like to board the first transport to distant Kepler-22b, just past, I'm guessing, Kepler-22-A and Kepler. If you start seeing signs for Kepler-22d, you know you've gone too far. Imagine leaving Earth and all you've ever known and loved one and loved behind for an unknown future 22 million miles years away. Sounds scary? Heck, I'd go in a minute if it meant I could miss Madonna performing at the Super Bowl halftime show. This was about 10 years ago I wrote this. Do you think it still holds up? I think there's some amusing parts there. I like the one about -22 2B, and, well, let's get on with the next one. It's been said hydrogen is the most abundant substance in the universe. It was created in the Big Bang. Don't believe it. From my observations, the most abundant substance in the universe is cardboard. It was created by Jeff Bezos. You and I probably share a lot of similarities. We're a couple of carbon-based life forms who rely on oxygen for necessary respiration. We have a biological need for things like pizza about once every 4 days. But there's one realm in which we're not at all alike. That is, you probably don't spend much time thinking about how much you have in common with the planet Pluto. You probably don't even give much thought over whether it's even a planet or not. I'm the exact opposite. I think about Pluto all the time. I one day dream of walking into a saloon strewn with evidence of an angry brawl had just occurred. Busted pool cues. Broken glass, pools of blood mingling with peanut shells and sawdust on the floor. I'll step over the bodies and ask the bartender what happened. Well, old Bert said Pluto wasn't a planet and he just couldn't let it go. Hank wouldn't have any of it, so and then it was on. My kind of bar. I've been comparing myself to Pluto for about 5 years now. It's because of Arnold Palmer, who, to my knowledge, has never golfed there. Neither have I, of course, but it wouldn't surprise me if one day future explorers found some of my old Titleists on the planet's surface from back when I couldn't control my drive. A visiting friend observed how lucky I was to be good friends with Palmer, to be in his inner circle. Not true, I'd say. I was, indeed, fortunate to have chummy access to him, but I wouldn't presume to say I was close friend or part of his inner circle. It's more accurate to say I was lucky just to be in his orbit. But I was like Pluto, and many scientists argue whether or not Pluto's even a planet. So I began to wonder about Pluto, often. How much do we have in common? Did you know Pluto has 5 moons, and they went billions of years without being seen? If you have moons, to me, bang, right there, that makes you a planet. And its moons have names, Charon, Styx, Nix, Hydra, and Kerberos. We have only one lousy moon, and it's named Moon. What gives? It's like having a dog and naming it Dog. I have one moon, and it gets seen in public about once every 12 years or so, or whenever I have an occasion to don a kilt. It takes Pluto 248 Earth years to make one orbit around the sun. 248 years! Just imagine what the Plutonian calendar would look like hanging from your refrigerator door. And let's not even think about adding the chaos of things like daylight savings time. It's difficult for our feeble minds to fathom such stellar distance. For instance, the light leaving the sun right now won't hit Earth for 8 minutes. That same light won't reach Pluto for another 5 hours and 42 minutes. For example, it would take a solar-powered golf cart traveling 36,400 miles per hour, about 9.5 years to reach Pluto. 9.7 if you stop for pee breaks. It's just a long way off, and there's no conceivable reason to be there. I say that with the understanding that, mark my words, one day there will be a souvenir shack, and the top seller will be one that says, "My grandparents went to Kerberos, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt." Long time for that punchline, wasn't it? I guess I feel a kinship because of the intangibles. It takes Pluto nearly 250 years to orbit the sun. It takes me nearly that long to get out of bed on a Sunday. Pluto is made primarily of rock and ice. Many of my career decisions seem in hindsight that they were made after consulting a man whose head was filled with rock and ice. Pluto struggles for recognition among its larger, gassier neighbors, and that is where the similarities end. No one's gassier than I. But if you've read this far, you probably already knew that. I suspect it's universal for every region to have a neighborly punching bag to make fun of for perceived obvious stupidity. It's why North Dakotians make fun of South Dakotians, Dakotans. Ohioans mock West Virginians, etc. But is it truly universal? And if so, how often are we the butt of jokes? Like, is there some alien wise guy on Kepler-23b entertaining his friends by saying, "Three Earthlings walk into a bar"? It times like these, the native optimist in me is at war with the inner doomsday realist, the one senses an existential threat. It looks like in order to keep the economy humming, many people are willing to risk the continuity of the species. I find the idea of a whimsically imposed Easter deadline ludicrous, especially when our best experts predict by Easter our major cities will be seeing long lines of dead. This happened back during the coronavirus problem. COVID. You know what I mean. I used to trust the biblical balm of Matthew 5, chapter, book 5, chapter 3. Is it verse 3? Chapter 5, verse 3, that estimates the meek shall inherit the earth. It's a lovely sentiment because it automatically seems to rule out obnoxious talk show hosts and their guests. But the rise of social media reveals a more obvious flaw in the declaration. There are no meek left. I know a few folks who can be described as demure, coy, and refined. And you're all reading my blog. You're sexy too. Just not meek. So who will inherit the earth? Their names are Andrew Morgan, Oleg Skripka, and Jessica Meir, or as I call them, Adam, and Eve. They are currently the only earthlings not on Earth. Commercial flights, already infected, don't count. The trio have been manning the International Space Station since prior to the advent of the coronavirus. It's a stupendous failure of marketing that we know nothing about these highly accomplished individuals, all white, who appear so rigidly straight arrow that odds that any of them ever told a fart joke, much less farted, are astronomical. But for them went what isn't astronomical. On paper, at least, that's an impressive trio. Morgan, 44, is a Morgantown native who now considers Newcastle home. A West Point graduate, he is a MD with a specialty in sports medicine. He served with the Special Forces and has four children. Skripka, 50, is a cosmonaut and a recipient of the Hero of the Russian Federation. That may be impressive, or it may be one of those fraudulent honors Putin likes to give away, like candy. Trump probably has a drawer full of them. One interesting fact about the guy with a long name is in 2010, and this is all unofficial, he, while on a spacewalk, slipped from his unsecured tether and began drifting to certain annihilation in the great black yonder. Miraculously, he just bounced off an antenna and was able to grasp a fortuitously positioned hand railing before drifting off to a grisly demise. That brings us to Meir, 42, of Caribou, Maine, and to the most impressive of the crew. Not only is she an astronaut, she's a marine biologist, a physiologist, and a Harvard professor of anesthesia. Her bio says she studied driving habits of emperor penguins in Antarctica and migratory patterns of barheaded geese over the Himalayas. One possible complication for her assuming the role of Eve version 2.0. She's never been married. She's perhaps a lesbian, which would be an inconvenience, to say the least, for any woman with a moral duty to repopulate the planet. More likely, she's never found a man her equal. I don't doubt it. I've sat next to men in bars nearly my whole life, and if I had a choice between studying your typical male in a bar and, say, a bar-headed goose flying over the Himalayas, I'd pick the bird. Imagine the head start humanity will have with a gene pool seeded by these three achievers. You might be dismayed that the guy with the long name, who forgot to secure his own lifeline, is one-third of the humanity's future. But I hate to think of a future that didn't include, for purposes of levity, my cursor doesn't seem to be working very well right now, excuse me. Purposes of levity, some Three Stooges elements. That was worth the wait. I doubt you'll hear about it, but some International Space Station drama may soon take place. Morgan, guy with a long name, and Meir are due to be replaced by a new tainted crew in just a few weeks. What if they refuse to answer the knock on the door of the replacements when they show up? That's what I'd do. Yes, I'd slide the little chain over the door, shut out the lights, and just pretend no one was home. In space, no one can hear you ring the doorbell. It'll make a great movie. I'd cast Viggo Mortensen as Morgan. Because we love him in Captain Fantastic. Anna de Armas as Mir, because we love her in Knives Out. And I'd cast the guy with the long name to play Kevin, be played by Kevin Spacey. Why him? Despite his recent troubles, I think any movie about space ought to have at least a little Spacey. Yes, I can get angry about racial injustice, inequality, and rampant poverty. But nothing makes me angrier than having to deal with eating a crappy pizza. I used to think I had a brain, but it was all in my head. Lastly, your goal should be to be so at peace with the world, the only thing you have left to get off your chest are your nipples.